And we will start with, assuming everybody's ready, we'll start with number 14, the lobbyist penalty correspondence. Jana McAmey?
McAmey. Okay. Chair, this is a lobbyist fourth quarter filing report. They were late quite a few days, $2,800. You folks had already given them a letter of education for quarter one, so this is the second violation. I've normally brought to you a recommendation of 10% of a second violation, which would be $280.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on this from commissioners?
Did Mr. Director, did Ms. McAmey provide any rationale for the violation? I can't remember.
She does have a letter here.
I see it, yeah.
You know, she was just unaware of the error and didn't rectify it quickly. So.
No, thank you. I had read that. I apologize.
Yeah.
Real quick, I'm going to check in with the commissioners. Do we have Commissioner Sosa and Commissioner O'Day with us?
I am here.
Awesome.
I'm here as well.
Okay, thank you. Just checking. Thank you all. And do we need a motion to accept staff recommendations?
We do.
Mr. Chair, I will move approval of the staff recommendation involving a fine for Ms. Jana McAmey, item number 14 on our April 30th regular session agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiskum. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay? Commissioner Lindsay, are you here?
He doesn't appear to be.
Okay.
Commissioner
O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye.
Motion passes 8-0.
And Commissioner Lindsay did text me and say that he will be running a little bit late, but we do have a quorum, so we're
okay.
Good to go. Item number 15, Oregon Building Trades Council.
Chair, I'm sorry, but this is one I'm throwing towards you. I don't really have a recommendation. In the past, we've had small violations. In quarter one of 2019, it was $10. Quarter two, 20, quarter 360, quarter one of 20 was $20, and quarter two of 20 was $10. However, in quarter four of 20, we have accumulated $2,850. So this would be the sixth time they've been late. And so I would just leave it up to the, I guess the brains of the commission to figure out what an appropriate fine would be. Like I said, they've only been a few days late before, the most 6 days in quarter 2019. Third quarter 2019. This time they were quite a few days late, and you have a letter of explanation there from them. So.
All right. Thank you, Director Burson. Any discussion amongst the commissioners in this interesting situation? Commissioner Sosa first, and then Commissioner Hollister.
Thank you, Chair. So yeah, just to kind of get the ball rolling and a discussion going here, I know in the past when we've had folks who've had repeat violations, you know, one or two, we usually reduce the fine by down to about 10%. Obviously, in this case, these folks have had multiple chances to learn and haven't, and I get that it was a previous lobbyist, and so the person's no longer there, but all the same, the organization, I think, has definitely been given multiple chances to figure this out, and they clearly haven't. So my thought, just as a point of discussion, is we could go to 20% of the fine, which would be $570. I think it still sends a message to them that this is serious, that you take it seriously, but also recognizes that sounds like there were some extenuating circumstances in this package. So just wanted to kind of throw that out there for a few discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Sosa. We appreciate that thoughtful perspective of getting some numbers going. Commissioner Halster?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to commend staff member Becky Mason on her efforts in reading Mr. Camarillo's letter. It is clear to me that the staff really takes its training seriously, and I was just incredibly impressed that she managed to come up with same-day training on this issue. So kudos on that.
Thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you for those words. Any other discussion on or conversation? We don't have a motion, but I do think that Commissioner Sosa brings up a really good point. And I do like the idea of you're going up to 20% and sending a message. Any other discussion? Do we have a motion?
Chair, I'll go ahead and make a motion then that we proceed with a fine, in this case, 20%, which would be $570.
Thank you, Commissioner Sosa. Do we have any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye.
Motion passes 8-0.
Thank you. We'll move to default final orders. Item number 24, Wilbur Beard of City Councilor of City of Lexington.
Thank you. Chair Mason, Commissioners, this is Diane Gould. Wilbur Beard was a city councilor for the City of Lexington and was required to file an annual statement of economic interest on or before April 15th of each year he served in that role. Mr. Beard was late in filing his SEIs in 2017, 2019, and 2020, and he accrued a total of $100 in civil penalties. The Commission sent the required notices via certified mail in January, and Mr. Beard received those notices. Included with the notices was a proposal to settle the matter for a lesser amount, but Mr. Beard did not respond to the offer. He didn't request a contested case hearing, and he didn't pay the outstanding penalties. Therefore, a default final order for $100 is in your meeting book for approval.
Thank you. Any discussion from commissioners?
Mr. Chair, my question is whether to get this gentleman's attention, $100 is enough in light of the apparent his apparent inability to contact us or deal with us.
Right.
Help me with that.
This is in the statutes for these offenses or these late filings. It's accrued by the day, and it's a set penalty.
This is 100% of the penalty.
This is 100% of the penalty. So
thank
we can't go further.
Thank you.
Any other discussion from commissioners? Am I missing somebody?
I'm missing
somebody back. Oh, okay. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I'll move approval of the default final order involving Mr. Wilbur Beard from the City of Lexington, item number 24, on our April 30th regular session agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiskum. Any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon? Chair Mason?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
Thank you. Number 25, case of Kayleen Erb, City Councilor, City of Mitchell.
Chair Mason, Commissioners, Ms. Erb served for the City of Mitchell as a City Councilor and failed to timely file her SEIs in 2018 and 2019 and accrued a total of $120 in civil penalties. The commission sent the required notices via certified mail in January to Ms. Erb's post office box, and the notices went unclaimed at the post office after three attempts at delivery. These notices were also sent the same day to Ms. Erb via email, and they included with the notices a proposal to settle the matter for a lesser amount, but Ms. Erb did not respond to the offer. She didn't request a contested case hearing, and she didn't pay the outstanding civil penalties. Therefore, a default final order for $120, which is the maximum 100% of the accrued penalty, is in your meeting book for approval.
Thank you. Any discussion from commissioners? Or questions?
Mr. Chair, hearing none, I will move approval of the default final order involving Ms. Kayleen Erb from the City of Mitchell, item 25 on our April 30th regular session agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiskum. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Sartoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye.
Motion passes 9-0.
Thank you. We'll go to number 26, case of Richard Alberts, former correctional officer, Oregon Department of Corrections.
Thank you. Excuse me. Again, this is Lisa Kristen, for the record, I'm an investigator with the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. Before the commission, at page 115 and item number 26 of your meeting book, is the case of Richard Alberts II, case number 20-040 ELC. This matter was an own motion case brought before the commission. The Oregon Government Ethics Commission considered information on February 13, 2020, contained in a news report that appeared in the Oregonian on December 24th, 2019, entitled Guard Accused of Smuggling Heroin Meth to Women Inmates. The information indicated that Richard Alberts II, former Oregon State Correctional Officer at Coffee Creek Correctional Institution, may have violated Oregon government ethics law by using his position to make money by bringing heroin and methamphetamine into the prison and distributing to inmates. The commission voted to move the matter to investigation after considering that preliminary review report on March 27th of 2020. At that time, the investigation was suspended pending the outcome of the criminal cases regarding Mr. Alberts. On November 23rd, 2020, Mr. Alberts pled guilty to one count of conspiracy to distribute controlled substances in Oregon Federal District Court. Excuse me, case number 19-CR-596. On February 26, 2021, he was sentenced to 16 months in federal prison. Mr. Alberts has also pled guilty to a related state charge, first-degree custodial sexual misconduct, a felony, in Washington County Circuit Court under a global plea agreement. He was sentenced to 3 years of probation in that court. He has not been ordered to pay restitution in either matter. Commission staff corresponded with the federal prosecutor who handled the federal criminal matter, Assistant U.S. Attorney Craig Gabriel. Mr. Gabriel provided the information that based on his investigation and prosecution related to narcotics being brought into the prison by Mr. Alberts received no financial gain as a result of his actions. Information in the court record, when I reviewed the court record, I found the sentencing memoranda for both prosecution and defense in the federal case and indicates that both sides, prosecutor and defense attorney, agreed that Mr. Alberts was bringing narcotics into the prison where he was employed solely to provide the same to his girlfriend and that no money changed hands at any time. As such, evidence is insufficient to indicate that respondent used or attempted to use his official position to obtain financial gain or avoidance of financial detriment for himself, a relative, or a household member, or any business with which any are associated. Commission staff is recommending that the commission dismiss the complaint in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you for that report. It was an interesting report because I've never seen somebody convicted for something and then we dismiss the complaint. So appreciate the long explanation of that.
It's an interesting case.
Any questions from commissioners? Commissioner Holster.
Chair, I just want to state on the record how incredibly serious I find the conduct alleged in the investigatory report And I did want to inquire of our investigator just two questions. One, I understand that the AUSA in this case determined that Mr. Albers received no financial gain. And so my question on that is whether or not you saw any evidence that he attempted to receive financial gain or avoid financial detriment. And then the second question I had is, you referred to the custodial inmate here as Mr. Albert's girlfriend. You know, given the power differential at play, I'm hesitant to characterize the relationship in that manner. But I do wonder if there is any, I mean, frankly, if but for, you know, Mr. Albert providing these drugs to the inmate, he would have provided something of value, and whether he managed to avoid providing something of value, you know, based on his position. I guess I'm trying to get my head around this, and I really appreciate your thinking on those topics.
Sure.
Thank you.
First of all, the girlfriend term was actually contained in the sentencing memoranda of both sides, which is why I used it. I honestly was sort of at a loss as to what else to use. And
yeah,
I agree with you.
Yeah, that wasn't my comment on you in any way.
No. I agree with you 100%. It's a very troubling case, especially given the concurrent state crime of custodial, you know, sexual assault. The matter regarding money and finances, one of the first things I looked at when this case had gone to the plea and then the sentencing in the federal system, was whether or not there was any restitution ordered or whether there was any consideration of any dollar amount by the court, and there was not. And that's what made me reach out to Mr. Gabriel and ask him specifically in this case, was there, because, you know, with my background, what I thought maybe was they had charged something and then pled it back down to something just for the sake of a plea. He indicated to me that was not the case, that they could not ascertain there was any financial gain to be had by his actions, that he was attempting, again, to woo, if you will, for lack of a better word, one of the inmates at Coffee Creek, and that he did so by supplying her and her alone with narcotics, and that no money changed hands. The other indication, again, was the defense attorney obviously would have a different viewpoint, but I was struck by the fact that the sentencing memoranda for both sides was completely 100% consistent about what the actual crime here was, and that it was the act of bringing narcotics into the prison, not that there was a sale, not that there was any other distribution, solely, you know, one person was receiving these. So that was the information I had, and again, my best evidence, really my only evidence, given that there was a pending criminal case, was what Mr. Gabriel told me about what he had found when he was investigating this case.
Thank you.
Can I just ask a follow-up on that?
Yes. Commissioner Halster.
Thank you. So it's your understanding, it sounds like, that there was no sort of quid pro quo. This is not a sort of drugs for sexual activities kind of exchange. I mean, it wasn't this for that type of exchange.
The information we have, and again, the statutes within which we work, wouldn't allow me to assign a value to the quo of the quid, that there would be, certainly there appears to have been, you know, an arrangement of some sort here, but again, the statutes within which we work, I don't know that there's any way for me or for anyone really at this table to assign a financial value to what had occurred. And that was another conversation I did have with Mr. Gabriel, because I did find that kind of fascinating. And he indicated that they were looking for some type of, you know, payoff, in some sort of gain for him, and that simply was not the case, which is why they agreed to the plea that they did.
Thank you. Commissioner Sosa.
Thank you, Chair. I definitely had some questions about this, and as I went back and looked at 244040, realized the extent to which use of official position is narrow, in that it is purely financial gain, that you are apparently, if we are interpreting it this right, that as long as you're getting paid in something other than money, it's not a prohibited use of office. That just as a notion struck me as problematic. And then when you mentioned today that it was his girlfriend, I just want to clarify, they didn't have a relationship prior to her being in custody, did they? Okay, because then my mind went to household member, you know, had she been a household member, he's smuggling drugs, therefore she doesn't have to pay another guard to do so. I'm thinking in different reactions here, but I continue to find it baffling that there seems to be this loophole that if you're not paid in money, it's not a prohibited use. And I'm hoping that someone can put my mind at ease on that point, because it just doesn't seem right.
Thank you for that, Commissioner Sosa.
Commissioner Sosa, you may have to wait till the 2023 legislative session. I mean, with all due respect to your point, part of the reason I say that is that I'm wondering if we have any alternative other than dismissal in light of the good work done by our staff. That dismissal in a case such as this gives me a sense of unease. It may be our only option legally in light of the reality of things, but if this is an issue we ought to put on our agenda for improving in the future, we ought to do that.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiscom. Can I just throw this over to the director, Burson? I mean, this seems like a very unique case. Obviously, we know, I feel, technically we just got to dismiss it, but, I mean, this is very unique for your years of experience on the commission.
Well, yes, Chair, I think it's unique. I mean, I haven't seen one like this before because, you know, usually, as you know, I'm arguing with you on not only the use of office, but the attempted use of office. So, I mean, I actually try to broaden that statute out as best I can. And it's not always money, as Commissioner Sosa talked about, but things of value. I mean, we had an earlier case today that's come out from review where they're not taking money, but they're actually, you know, purchasing items that they could use personally. So we, you know, we've tried to kind of expand it out, but when you get to this, you know, what do you call it, the wooing, whatever, I'm kind of at a loss for words, too. It seems like something that should be right in our bailiwick, just like something that's just a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. You can't bring drugs into a prison as a prison guard, otherwise you fall into trouble with the Ethics Commission. But, however, my mind is still okay because he did fall in trouble with,
yeah,
you know, right, the law and just not ours. But it was frustrating. Like I said, I read this thing through, and I think I actually turned back to the beginning. It's like, we're dismissing this thing, and then you get down to it. In fact, I think I came and asked Lisa, like, we just can't find any financial gain. And as you know, the conflict of interest statutes are also pointing towards a pecuniary interest, which is another financial gain. So they've given us a narrow set of laws, but, you know, like I said, usually I'm arguing with the commission to, you know, push those boundaries out, but I just had no place to go here.
Thank you for that. Well, if we have any future lawmakers, you know, as commissioners as part of this, this could be something you can tackle in the future. But anyway, thank you for that. Any additional discussion amongst the commissioners? Seeing none, do we have a motion to dismiss?
Mr. Chair, with some hesitancy, I hereby move that we accept the staff recommendation to dismiss complaints against Mr. Richard Alberts, former correctional officer for the Oregon Department of Corrections, item number 26 on our April 30th regular
Thank
session
you.
Agenda.
Thank you. Any additional discussion? Seeing none, roll call vote. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh,
sure.
Commissioner Holster,
sorry.
And then Commissioner Sosa. Commissioner Holster?
Oh, sorry. Okay. So I am going to vote to dismiss with great reluctance, and I just want to explain my vote on the record. Certainly, my vote to dismiss is in no way an affirmation of the underlying conduct, which I find despicable. And so I do think this is something that we need to look at and really think critically about when formulating our legislative agenda going forward.
Thank you, Commissioner Holster. Commissioner Sosa?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I echo what Commissioner Hollister said. I mean, the law is what it is, and it's unfortunate that in this particular instance that we don't find this legally to be unethical conduct per the statute, even though in a broader sense it is most profoundly an unethical thing that this individual did. With great reluctance, I think we have to dismiss, but I think this is definitely something that we need to look at as a potential loophole that needs to be fixed in the future. Because I know this is the kind of the first time this has come before us, but it's so glaring that this is an issue, but yet our hands are tied. So,
thank you. Commissioner Sosa. Commissioner Fiscom.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to suggest at least that we include in our minutes today, for the record, the statements from Commissioners Hollister and Sosa, rather than just and only the final vote we take on this matter, because I, for one, want to associate myself with their comments, both in terms of the abhorrent conduct we're talking about here, as well as the need for a future consideration of a legislative fix down the road. So if our minutes could reflect that, I think that would be helpful context for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fiscom. And I would want to echo that as well. Commissioner Hollister's words were put very eloquently, and I would, of course, want to be associated with those as Commissioner Sosa. And like I said, I think this is first time in 4 years that I've been here that we've actually, somebody's been doing prison time, and yet we've actually dismissed the ethics complaint, which is very unique. Saying that, can we have a roll call vote?
Thanks for your patience.
Sure.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Sartoon?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiscom?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Aye.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Chair Mason?
Aye.
Motion is passed 9-0.
Thank you. Number 27 is not on our agenda this time. It's on there, but we're not addressing it. We'll jump down to staff opinions. Number 28.
I just have a quick comment.
Yeah. Director Burson.
So this opinion, or the staff opinion, number 28, I've been encouraged and I've agreed with it that I believe that you'll be seeing this as an advisory opinion at the June meeting. So if you haven't really got a chance to really look at it, you know, closely, please do that. One of the reasons is the staff opinion is, as you can see, they asked for it on the 19th of March. I mean, the staff opinions, we have 30 days to get them out, so I think there was some, you know, trying to get the advice out to them. But this is a good example of the class exception, and it's been suggested to me that I think it'd be a good one for the commission to vote on as a class exception. So just pay particular attention to this one. You'll be seeing it again in June.
Okay, thank you. Number 29, staff advice.
Again, these are here for informational only. I'd like to put out anything that I'm putting out underneath my signature that you folks can see on the advice we're giving out. Of course, this stuff is also posted on our website in the case management system.
Then we'll move to item number 30, Guide for Public Officials. Did you want to discuss that?
We'll talk about the audit later, but you'll see, I believe it's item number 14 in the suggestions in the audit, was that we get our public official guide out. We're late on that. And we knew that. It's unfortunately one of the things that kind of gets push to the side, trying to get other stuff done, but we were aware of that, and we were working on it at the time. I don't want the commission to get the impression that the auditor found them, and we got to working on it. We had been working on it at the time it was suggested to us. But this is the new public official guide. It acts as an advisory opinion, so therefore it requires a vote of the commission. So people that act within the public official guide would basically get that same safe harbor that somebody that acted within an advisory opinion would get. So, Chair, this does require a vote of the commission.
Do we have any discussion on the public official guide?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just quickly, I see Mr. O'Day
is in the queue as well with what looks like his hand raised. I'm happy to ask, I don't know when the time was right, if any time was right to make this comment, I'll make it anyway. One of the thoughts that's crossed my mind a few times as we've considered executive session issues on our agenda, and I recognize there's kind of a split jurisdiction on public meetings law relative to our responsibility as executive session as opposed to the general law, but one of the things that crossed my mind, I could argue pro and con probably, is whether it would be helpful to local governments that deal with executive sessions to come up with samples of boilerplate language that they could choose to utter when they call an executive session. The difficulty, of course, is that you know, the statutory citations, which might not be required in each case, are going to be different depending on the issue. But it seems to me that we've had a lot of technical issues where local officials may not know exactly the right words to say, and my friendly question is, could we help them? Mr. DeBurson, I'll yield to you.
Yeah, so we have thought of that, Commissioner Briscoe, and as you know, right now, we actually have one of our bills going through is actually giving us authority to give advice on executive session.
Safe harbor, et cetera.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so without that statute change, we didn't feel as though we could actually have it in the guide and act as, in other words, we don't have the statutory authority right now to give advice. So once that passes, then I actually believe this commission will be putting out a guide for executive sessions that helps them kind of does that transition between the Attorney General's guide and maybe just kind of get a little more plain language on how the commission interprets different laws that are in there too. So
thank you.
That is in the future. I just can't do it now because I don't have the statutory authority to do it. But as you know, we're asking this legislature to give us that authority to do that.
Fair enough. Thank you very much. That's important. Very helpful.
Yes. Commissioner O'Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to congratulate the staff on getting this done. I did a preliminary review, and it looks fantastic. However, it's the sort of document that I think we really want to be mindful and thoughtful about and really give it a thorough review. As Executive Director Burson said, you know, this does have the same legal status as an advisory opinion of this commission, and as such, people can rely upon it as a basis to defend any alleged ethics violations. I'm not sure how the rest of you feel, but I would, and I know we got an advanced copy of it, which was very much appreciated, but given my civilian schedule lately, I've been unable to give it the review that I think it's due, and I, for one, would like to postpone the vote on this at least until June. In addition, you know, although it's an opinion, these sorts of guides also often, I think, those in the practice, local government practice world, will look at these as also being more like administrative rules, as often is the case, for example, with the Secretary of State's office. When they issue such a guide, it comes out as an administrative rule. And so the other question that's on my mind is whether it would be appropriate to open up or allow and invite, if you will, comment, particularly from the local government bar and others who are impacted and actively practice in this area, just so that they can provide us any insights in case we're missing any, if we have any blind spots, if you will, and haven't covered something or there's an ambiguity in the guide, I think inviting that kind of review would be helpful. So not making a motion, would rather just kind of throw it open, subject to the chair's discretion for, you know, everybody's general thoughts and take your temperature on those two ideas.
Thank you, Commissioner O'Day. I see Commissioner Edwards.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'd just like to add, if we were given the luxury of time, two concerns I have is just that this document spread lots of types of public officials, which have an array of education level, language, a lot of, you know, diversity issues that I'm not sure if we've considered whether or not we've approached this in a way that's going to be accessible to all kinds of different public officials. So I just wonder what capacity we have for resources such as translation, if we've been looking at this using any kind of resources in the state around equity lens. It just seems like it's such an important document that reaches so many different types of workers. I want to make sure that to our mission of education, this will be something that we point to for years to come to folks and essentially tell them, you should have known, here's this document. And if we're not taking the time and care to make sure that it's approachable for all types of people, I worry that we're missing an opportunity.
Thank you, Commissioner Edwards. Can I just say, because obviously I read the public policy book and the audit, and it sounded like this was an updated this was updated. So this document has existed but it's been updated.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a document out there that's in play right now that people could rely on. It's just this is updated.
Right. So because I think I think some of my commissioners, and I could be wrong on interpreting what they're saying, that this is the first time this document has existed, which is not the case.
No,
an updated version.
The document that I talked to Commissioner Fiskum about, if we created a guide for executive session after this statute, after the law gets changed, that would be a new document for the commission. But this is a revision from the prior revision, which I think was what. 2000.
First in 2010, then it was updated in 2015.
Yeah,
so this
because in the audit, they refer to the fact that it hadn't been updated in 4 or 5 years, hence the clarification of this. Because I think it's a great document, and frankly, I was thinking that, I think if Commissioner O'Day, since he has worked with elected officials from Associated of Counties, you know, in a past life or League of Cities.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Obviously, I think his attention for detail would be interesting to see. But I mean, it seems like this would be something you'd want to get out sooner rather than later when you have, you know, school board elections and a lot of, you know, like we dealt with earlier today. Mm-hmm. Yvonne, with the way they were talking about a lot of those new board members, could have been, you know, whether it would have prevented their situation, they could have benefited from, you know, this going out widespread early on. So I think it's my opinion, it'd be beneficial to get it out sooner rather than later, based on the fact this is revisions to an existing document from the past.
If my colleague, Mr. Edwards, has a further comment, I'll yield and then make a, ask a question. Go ahead.
Yep. Commissioner Edwards, my apologies if I missed you.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'll lower. But I would ask a clarifying question then. My understanding is that the document extends to all public officials, so that would be including the folks that we've seen today, such as, you know, people in public works, other kinds of... So that it's not specific to electeds. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fiskum?
My question is, in light of comments from Commissioner O'Day and Commissioner Edwards, is there two questions. Mr. Executive Director, what would be the risk, from your vantage point, of delaying the issuance of this updated document for one meeting to allow for a greater review of it?
Well, I'm sorry, I don't think there's really a measured risk that comes about. What I will say, though, is just because we haven't updated since 15, you know, that's part of that's on me. That doesn't mean that document, like if you put this document out and, like I said, we have a legislative session that has some law changes, and so we do have some law changes, we can do revisions sooner than that, too.
Sure.
So, you know, and as far as concluding local governments, I think we've always included them in this process of writing the official or the public official guide. But you know, there's really no damage other than I believe I might have put in my response to the letter for the audit that it was coming before the commission. I don't think I said it was going to become effective, but I think it was coming up for a vote. So that would be public as of Monday when the audit comes out.
Two other quick questions. You have, if you don't have any response on this, that's okay. Do you have any response to the notion of this being codified as an administrative rule?
as well as a publication of this sort?
Well, I mean, I understand what Commissioner O'Day talked about, that it kind of has some of the effect of an administrative rule. And like I said, we've kind of treated it like that, where we don't have the formal administrative rule process, but we try to include the people that are covered by this public official guide, getting their input into, especially when you get down to examples, you know, that are most helpful. I thought Commissioner Edwards was really interesting that I haven't really thought of other languages,
right?
You know, things like that. So I'm really appreciative of that, and I think that we could put the guide out into other languages, and we could talk with the state library about being able to do those type of things. So using some of our state resources for that. But it's not an administrative rule. There's a promulgation process for administrative rules.
Right.
But I agree with Commissioner O'Day that sometimes it has the effect of administrative rule, and we should include our stakeholders in writing that, so there shouldn't be, like, you know, giant surprises that all of a sudden we've interpreted the law to mean this when we've never talked about it in the past. So, but as far as the review, and other than, like I said, I have to look at my response. What was the exact response on? Do you remember that, Diane?
No.
Anyway,
my quick reaction was, well, my last question, Ron, already tested about that, was as a possibility of translations. Is that a good idea, pro or con? And I don't know enough to know the answer to the question, though I think it's a good one.
Well,
ourselves.
And just to be clear, you know, those translations would happen with the approved revision.
Absolutely.
You know, so then the agency would spend the funds to have it translated so that we do reach more public officials out there.
Right.
So today, what you are asking, whether we would vote to approve an updated version of an existing document that's already been out there.
That is what is before you today,
right.
Yes.
Okay. Just so our commissioners are not, you know, like this is something completely new. Any additional discussion from commissioners on this topic? Do we have a motion? Obviously, we have a conversation, you know, with regards to potentially putting it off. Commissioner Lindsay.
Yeah, I'm fine to approve it. So I'll make a motion. I move to approve as Executive Director Gerson has requested.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. Any discussion on the motion to approve the guide for public officials? Seeing no discussion, roll call vote, please. Oh, sorry. Commissioner Edwards.
I would just say, Chair, with all respect to the staff going to put a lot of effort into this, this just feels like a rushed conversation to me, so I don't feel like I can support the motion at this moment, but in no way is that speaking to the quality of the work or my desire to engage in the conversation and for us to provide this document. I just feel like it feels a little rushed for me as well.
Thank you, Commissioner Edwards. Any other commissioners? We'll proceed with a roll call vote.
Commissioner O'Day?
Nay.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Sortoon?
Nay.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Edwards?
Nay.
Commissioner Fiscom?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollister?
Nay.
Commissioner Lindsay?
Aye.
Chair Mason has
aye.
A deciding vote.
Oh.
Motion passes 5-4.
We do not have many of those votes at all. Okay. Well, that was interesting.
So I just a quick thought. Please review the guide. If there's any revisions you have, I'm not opposed to putting out another revision for votes. Like I said, I'll put this one out, but it doesn't mean that we can't revise it sooner than 5 years. So since there's a little, I don't think anybody has anything any problems with what's in there, but maybe what's not in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so please bring those suggestions forward to myself, and we'll see what we can do. Okay?
Thank you, Director Burson. And thank you for commissioners. That was a lively discussion on that.